a peaceful song, Feathers on the Wind, from the CD by the same name by Golana. I played that song to help us remember that in the scheme of things, we are a feather in the wind. Influenced by circumstance, yet free to be who we are and what we are. This is BBS Radio, the voice of the people. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, for the next hour of Sound Health. On this show, we attempt to bring you ideas and information to instill new thoughts and ideas for self-health. Today, we have with us an exciting author and screenwriter, Elizabeth Hughes. She writes about some of our favorite subjects, the Templars. We will be with Elizabeth in just a few minutes right after. I guess we only have one announcement. As many of your regulars know, this show is sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, and we study the idea that there's vocal codes hidden within the information of your voice, all the frequencies and architectures of your voice, in which clues about your personality, your structure, your frame, your bones, your muscles, your biochemistry, your neurotransmitters, is hidden in. We've been studying this stuff for a long time. We named what we have found frequency-based biomarkers, and we've developed a new field of study called bioacoustic biology. That's our sponsor here. And it also is a new science called sonistry. Just like there is a system of chemistry in the body, there's a system of sound and frequency, and we call it sonistry. I think that's an ancient idea that's been with us since the beginning of time. The idea of a mother singing to their baby to soothe it. The idea that a youngster goes through, a male goes through puberty and the voice changes. The idea that at death we sing dirges to help relieve our grief. So from cradle to grave, we use sound and frequency in a way that comforts us. We've taken that idea and we've done a lot of studies about health and wellness. We have lab tests and results to prove what we're saying. And we know that within the frequencies of your voice lies information about you. From the very ancient idea of signature sounds, that everyone has an identifiable frequency that's uniquely them, to modern readings of the body using frequencies like CAT scans or MRIs, something like that. We also know that humans use this every day to help heal themselves. Even moaning is a form of healing. Singing, it entertains us, but it also lets us know how we feel and changes our feelings. We want to bring you that information that we've been studying, so we've created a two-set CD that we call Breaking the Sound Barriers of Disease. And there's a bonus CD called Miracles of Non-Medicine. It's about some of the doctors who've worked with this and their experiences with this new math-based medicine that we're going to talk about tonight. You can call our office at 740-698-9119, Monday through Friday, to order this two CD set for only, it's $19.99. Might as well say $20. Okay. We want you to know about this. We want you to buy it to help support our research. We want you to make lots of copies and give it to lots of your friends because this information needs to be known. And by the end of the show, you will have figured out why I'm saying that. Also, for those of you who have downloaded our Nano Voice, N-A-N-O Voice, our free computer program and manual that allows you to look at your voice, the site is back up. We were crashed beyond retrieval. We had to tear it down and put it back up again. So those of you who have downloaded that already and want some more information, Ben Powers, a wonderful film student here at Ohio University, has put together several learning lessons, and he's put them on YouTube, and he's also put them on Ustream. YouTube is youtube.com. Just look under Sound Health or Sherry Edwards. And Ustream is just the letter U, stream, like a brook. And you can look under Sound Health. There's a lot of good information there. And we used a lot of the political candidates' voice prints over this entire campaign to give you some good information. Okay, on with the show. Our guest tonight is Elizabeth Hughes, author, songwriter, scriptwriter, and she writes about one of our favorite subjects, the Templars. Elizabeth, tell us how you got interested in the Templars. Well, first, thank you for being on the show. And, you know, I forgot to give people our numbers because we're going to take some calls. Let's see if I can find the numbers. Tell people how you got interested in this, and I'll find the numbers they can call.
Okay. Once again, thanks for having me on the show, Sherry. It's great to be here. I am an author and a screenwriter. And one of my favorite topics is the Knights Templar, probably because I've studied a lot of medieval and church history, and I'm a conspiracy theorist, and they don't get any better than the Inquisition, and that's one of the lost factors of the Inquisition that people tend to think of the Spanish Inquisition as a way that the church suppressed other sects, but really, it didn't start with the Spanish Inquisition. It was Western-wide, and it was targeted at a specific group, which was the Order of the Poor Knights of Solomon, or the Knights Templar as we know them. My interest was piqued just from studying history. I was an English major in college, loved literature, which got me interested in history. And as I started studying more history, I ran across this group or this order during the medieval period that they were soldier monks, which is not really something you would think the Catholic Church is having, considering the fact that they're not supposed to be a violent organization.
We should also tell people that you're a devout churchgoer.
I am. In fact, I'm converting to Catholicism, so I hope this doesn't hurt that process. But it's all in the quest to dig for the truth. And that's something that we should do in history as well as now. We should look at every angle for everything and not take anything at face value, or as we're told, especially in the media. So I did start studying that topic and really got to see the power between the church and state and the struggle, and that was really when the papacy lost its political stronghold. And the Knights Templar were an integral part of that. They were the scapegoat, basically, for the capture.
What happened to the Templars?
Well, the Knights Templar, when they were first initiated, were in order to protect pilgrims on their way to Jerusalem, Christian pilgrims, because even though the Christian states had hold over Jerusalem and had won back Jerusalem, all the territories around it were Muslim. And a very popular form of devotion even now is to go to Jerusalem, go to the sites where Christ performed his miracles. Yes, a pilgrimage. Go to the sites where Christ performed his miracles, where he died, where he was buried. And as part of that, they were having mass excursions into Jerusalem, and these caravans of even 500-600 people were being harassed, robbed, and butchered by surrounding Muslims who would hide in the forest waiting for them to go by, basically just looking to get their wealth. They were
robbers.
Robbers, yeah. Glorified robbers. So that's how they began. But they were actually the first established banking system.
The Templars? How were they?
The Templars. Despite the fact that they were a church organization, they actually did perform usury, which was illegal at the time, but they had amassed so much wealth because as a monastic order, they had a lot of privileges. All the monastic orders did. They were exempt from taxes, things of that nature. And because
Still going on today,
exactly. And I'm at a loss for words here. As they started gaining land and money, because royals, which was common at the time, would donate massive amounts of land and money to them, so they would pray for them, help them get into heaven despite their sins, and they became a very rich organization. The individuals still lived in poverty, as monks would, but as an organization, they had land and money all over the place.
And what happened to them? Why all this big resurgence right now?
Okay.
Why did you write your play?
Well, I wrote my play basically because I saw them as the victims they were. Not that they had done anything wrong. They had grown in wealth. They had created jealousies among the bishops and cardinals who had no authority over them, and yet they had all this wealth. And they were giving this wealth out to pilgrims, and basically the pilgrims would come to them, leave their money and their goods with them. They would write them a note that they would take to Jerusalem, and they could turn in that note for the same amount of whatever they left.
So bankers.
Yeah, they were bankers. They were the first banking system, and that's really what started their problems.
Were they Catholics?
They were. They were Catholics.
And why didn't the priests or cardinals have any control over them?
Because they were monks.
Well, monks aren't, isn't that part of the Catholic?
They have, yes.
Hierarchy?
Some. The monastic orders who were allowed to carry weapons, the Hospitallers, the German Teutonics, they weren't subject to the normal Catholic hierarchy. They were only subject to the Pope. And this did create a lot of jealousies and a lot of conspiracies, kind of like the Freemasons now. Their initiation rituals, certain things they would practice in their houses, were secret, completely secret.
Freemasons are from the Templars?
Freemasons do consider their roots in the Templar, basically the Templar dispersion. They consider themselves carrying on the Templar legacy.
Well, and the stuff that we see, like in the Da Vinci Code, where the Catholic Church actually was trying to get rid of the Templars and tortured them, is that part of real history?
Oh, yes. The entire process took 7 years. Hundreds of Templars died in prisons, were tortured to death. Some were actually taken to trial with their feet missing because it wasn't normal for inquisitors to be able to inflict blood or visual physical pain. They would do things like the stretching machines, but they weren't allowed to draw blood normally, but this was an exception. They weren't arrested actually by the Catholic Church. They were arrested by the King of France, Philip the Fourth the Fair.
How did that come about?
He had been trying to initiate an inquiry into their proceedings for quite some time, and the Pope basically wouldn't have it. He held them in high regards, as most other kings did. The kings in the other countries were extremely, extremely upset and protested when he arrested them. He arrested them in the middle of the night on Friday the 13th in 1307, which is one of the legends where we get the saying, you know, Friday the 13th is unlucky. But he arrested them in secret. He sent letters out to his seneschals, which were like his police state, and had them arrested and put in his prison.
So the Catholics condoned it, or they?
Oh, no. No, the Pope fought him for a while on it, but the Pope was in a very precarious position. Philip had pretty much placed him in the papacy. Because as the process occurs, the Pope has to be voted on. All the cardinals and bishops will meet at the Vatican, and it's a very long process, but they cannot decide on anyone. And his predecessor had died very suddenly. So the King of France, behind closed doors, before the Pope's ceremony, supposedly made deals with him that, hey, you know, you help me out in certain things, I will hand you this office. The Pope of the Catholic Church never actually stepped foot in Rome. He held Vatican in France, which he was highly criticized for. Dante Alighieri used to write about him all the time, condemning him, which was a very bad thing for him at the time, because you did not condemn the Pope.
You know, I got the idea from the Da Vinci Code that it was the Catholic Church that was carrying this on. Is that wrong?
It's not wrong. Through a struggle of letters and threats, King Philip had circulated flyers about Pope Clement because the Pope would not allow the trial to take place and wanted the prisoners released. He was highly offended, obviously, because his office was overstepped. The King of France did not have the right to do that. And the King of France met with several university professors of law in Paris. And they told him, you know, I'm sorry, you don't have the right to do this, but there should be a trial because enough charges have been brought against them. So the Pope, through roundabout circumstances, was influenced to keep this going. And there was a long series of councils set up. There was one just for individuals and one for the order itself to try to put on the appearance that he had control, even though he didn't. He still didn't. King Philip still held all the prisoners.
Did they annihilate all of this sect?
Well, several did escape from other countries, most of them in France, were either defrocked, which meant they were no longer Templars, because the Templar order was dissolved completely because they were supposed to be too scandalized to continue. That was the Pope's verdict. But a lot of them in France were not able to do that because they died in the process. In fact, some were burned at the stake 7 years later, along with the Grand Master of the order, Jacques de Molay.
What happened to the wealth?
Well, that's a good question. Because a lot of the records were destroyed.
The Catholic Church has just put out an $8,500 leather-bound book about some of the Templar records. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't, but I have found, I did gain access to some of the Vatican's library and found translations of documents, but not many were released at the time.
You have a tattoo on your arm.
I do.
That is the Maltese cross.
The Maltese cross. That was the symbol of the temple.
You must be really committed to have it tattooed in such an obvious place. And that's probably one of the reasons, I don't even know how to state this. Do you feel like you're connected? Are you part of the Templar order? Do you have some genetic connection to put this tattoo on you? And it's the same thing that the firemen use. That's the Maltese cross. And it's always been a symbol down through the ages of those who help with health and well-being. So what's your commitment to this symbol?
Well, through my writing, I see the commitment to well-being, to get the story out for people to know the truth. However, I kind of use it as a remembrance that no matter how powerful you get, you can still fall.
You mean the Templars got very powerful and they took them down?
They got very powerful. And they were truly victims. None of the charges were actually, none of them were confirmed.
Were they bad people or was just a jealousy thing going on?
It was a jealousy thing. The kings of the Western Kingdom didn't want to be subject to a pope. You have to remember at that time, the Pope could excommunicate them from the Catholic Church, and they no longer had any rights. They were tired of what they felt was a God-given position, the right of king. So it was very much a power play. You have to understand, the Catholic Church is a very powerful organization now, but it was the government at the time. Because if kings went against it, it could make sure that their lives were very miserable.
In all your research that you've done, do you think there's more to the purpose for the Templar order than just protection? Did they also hold information or anything like that? I mean, you see that. I see it in the Da Vinci Code. I read it, mm-hmm. that there's all of these codes going on that they were protecting. Did you find that in your research?
Well, there were a lot of things like that. A lot of what they supposedly held was speculation. Everything from a holy grail that was an actual relic to the Ark of the Covenant. They did have the Temple of Solomon, which is now under Muslim control. And still to this day, governments would love to get under there and dig around and see what they left. Because they had an entire city underneath there, basically, where they kept their horses, kept their weaponry, kept their reserve of water in case they were under siege. There were those things, but as I did study, they had extensive relations with the Assassins, which were their Muslim counterparts. and they were known to be, believe it or not, quite religiously tolerant. They would allow Muslim visitors to come into their temples and pray to their gods, which was frowned upon in the Catholic Church. And when they were imprisoned, in several of the prisons, they found markings left on the walls by them that were geometric in nature, that the church did not teach.
Do you think there's some hidden information there?
I do.
And all this stuff about the Holy Grail and the books are being written, do you think it's because the human race now is remembering, or the people that were left, the genetic line, do you think that was left? And people are bringing it out, and it's time, or do you think this is just out in the ethers and people are picking it up, this big resurgence is going on?
I think it's more of a resurgence.
That it's time?
Yeah. I think it's incredible that when I started the research for my screenplay, there was not a lot of literature about the Templars, and now they're a pretty hot topic. I mean, they're a best-selling book. And the Da Vinci films, you know, the Da Vinci books do help with that because everybody loves a conspiracy. But behind a conspiracy, there's always truth.
Tell us about your screenplay.
Oh, okay. My screenplay picks up right before the arrest. It opens with the siege and taking of the last Christian stronghold, the Castle of Acre. And there had been debate as to whether or not to converge the orders together and make one larger order, which, of course, they were fighting against. They didn't want that. And that was about the time that they were arrested by Philip. So that's where I pick up, basically, with their arrest.
Do you talk about the conspiracy and explain any of this?
I explain more of the interactions between the King of France and the Pope. I try to show how his opinion went against the majority. You have to remember he was highly indebted to them, so he would be the one to start it. However, there were accounts that they had strange practices that came out during the trial that were never truly explained, and I show some of that. So when you'd watch the film, you would wonder at the end, well, was there some truth to that? Because that was never really answered. There was something going on in their houses, something that was being hidden. But you never really find out what that is. It's speculation at this point. I think it will come out, though.
Well, I know that you have dreams about this and you get information from the dreams. Mm-hmm. Do you think some of this information is going to come out? Because it drove me crazy with the Da Vinci Code. They never told you what the secret was.
Yeah, because they can't.
Because they don't know.
They don't know. And that's the beauty of it.
But your dream.
Because you're constantly guessing, you're constantly searching and seeking for that key, that revelation as to what they really had that made them so dangerous.
What do you think, or do you have any inclination about what the secrets are about? They had lots of money. Is it about where the money is? Did they have some knowledge that we need as a human race? What was it?
I think their money and power initially had a lot to do with it, initially. But as things started coming out during the trial, as they started to see things like the geometric shapes, it's obvious that, and these, you have to keep in mind, weren't very learned men. Yet most of them couldn't read in Latin. They could only read in their home language, which could be anywhere in Western France. So for men who weren't learned at all, they were very good at what they did. But for them to understand things like geometry, and remember these were things that went against the Catholic Church's teaching, they were learning something from somewhere. They had knowledge from somewhere else. I don't know that they were protecting a holy bloodline. I could see that as a possibility. I don't see why that would be offensive. But at the same time, why would they be the ones to keep it? What if it were something else, something they had discovered, something they were holding that made them dangerous?
Do you think it's a control issue or information to allow the people to be free or...
No, I don't think it was a control issue. I think there was no malice on their part whatsoever, but I think the information they had would have been dangerous to them because at that point in time, everything was supposed to be spiritual. Everything else was sinful.
I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, could you just hold on a second?
Sure thing.
I think there's a movie out with Sean Connery called The Name of the Rose, and it's where the Franciscans split with the Catholic Church, and the idea there was that the Franciscans said, you have a direct link to God from your heart to God's heart, and the Catholic Church was saying, no, you need to pay us for this connection.
Mm-hmm.
Could that be the same kind of thing?
It could be. I mean, that's what spawned the Reformation. Actually paying to have your sins forgiven, because if you paid a greater amount, you could sin more.
And pay to be saved, and pay to have a priesthood, and pay to have a sainthood.
It has
to
do with money.
Yeah.
And that's, the Catholic Church is extremely wealthy, and everything boils down to money on earth, let's face it. And usually when someone does something terrible towards someone else, that's one of the motivations, is money. I don't think the Templars were motivated in that sense. I think the Catholic Church, in a sense, was, but money couldn't have been the entire issue. I mean, all the Pope had to do was start taxing them. He had the power. He could have done it. Were it an issue of money, it could have been taken care of. So it had to be something else.
It had to bury something. Okay, I want to make a connection here. Okay. Sylvia Franck wrote a book called The Tree of Life and the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about this secret knowledge and the Ark and the Covenant, and talks about it as if it is a piece of information of some kind that would help human beings understand why they're here, have dominion over why they're here. Have you read her book?
I've read parts of it, yes.
What do you think?
And you were mentioned in her book, were you not?
I was, and that's the fascination I have with the Templars. Mm-hmm. I've always been fascinated with the Maltese cross. And we have a symbol here that we use that I have dreamt about and had in my mind for lots of years. And it's on our literature. It's on our letterhead. And when we had that particular geometric shape made into a form, the shadow that it created was a Maltese cross, which blew my mind. So
if you get it in a dream, it could come from somewhere.
Well, the fact that only its shadow creates the Maltese cross, and you're talking about they want to bury things or sting behind it, the idea of a shadow. I just think things are beginning to come together, because what's going on in my life, and I'm going to be selfish here for a minute, is I just receive information about frequencies and hidden codes in the voice and what's going on with that. And it just kind of drops in. Like if I ask you what you had for breakfast, it just kind of all drops in. I never had to learn it. And I go check it out, and it's true. And we have built an entire field of study around this that really is helping people have dominion over their own healing from the inside out. Things like restructuring nerves and reversing macular degeneration, and some of these diseases that conventional medicine just says is absolutely uncurable. We can look at people's voice, the hidden messages, the hidden codes in their voice, based on information that I've received, and begin to put it together, and their body reverses its own disease. Now, Sylvia Franck said in the back of her book, very beautifully, that this information is part of the Templars' hidden mysteries. And she named me as one of the keepers, there are many, one of the keepers of the Holy Grail information. So when I met you, and you have a Maltese cross, obviously, on your arm where I can see it, and you've written plays about the Templars, and you have an extraordinary amount of information and a lot of intuitive information about this. So does Sylvia Franck, bringing it together to this point, to human bioacoustics. In you've hung around here for a bit. Do you have any inclination as to whether part of this information is part of the Templar information?
I believe it very well could be, because it's very interesting when you refer to the Ark of the Covenant as something other than physical. As you study a lot of Christian history, a lot of the Jewish history is based in mythology. And I believe that because of the Templars' dealings with the assassins, very much Easterners, when you talk about Eastern mysticism, medical practices, it was very spiritual in a sense. And it wasn't scientific as what we would consider medicine now.
Did you find anything about sound or frequency in any of the hidden knowledge or information?
In the books, well, you know, I had never considered it until I saw Sylvia Franck's book. But after that, it made perfect sense, and I'll tell you why. Because there's power in the voice, and there's power in things people say if they believe it. On the stake before he burned to death, the Grand Master of the Order of the Knights of the Temple put a curse on the Pope and the King. Within a year, I will see you at the pearly gates, and you'll answer before God. And you know what happened?
They both died.
They both died within a year. One died within 2 months.
So the power of the voice.
Power of the voice. There's something there. Okay. It's like there's something connecting us all. I don't know if you want to, I know people talk about auras and energy, and that is what it all is. And as a Christian, I believe it's all part of creation. Everything. We're all connected.
Well, almost all pictures of Jesus have a golden aura around his head, yet a lot of Christians don't believe in auras.
Exactly.
Hey, caller, are you still there? Hello, caller.
Am I on?
Yes, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
I've been enjoying this very much. I was raised by a genealogist who talked a lot about this time period, and she used to look at charts that were spread out all over the dining room tables, and she'd say, you know, there are two bloodlines that have been ruling this world for just ages. The names change, but the bloodlines don't. And when Holy Blood, Holy Grail came out, I said, oh, my God, those were all the things my mother was talking about. And I don't agree with one thing you said. I think that money was a major issue for the Templars. I think that they were very anxious to have money because they saw it as a means to power. Yes, they were very spiritual, but it was not a type of spirituality. And I do think that their trip to the Holy Land was as much to gain artifacts and to gain money as it was to do anything else, to gain in spirituality. I don't think they were terribly concerned with protecting the road to Jerusalem.
What ideas do you have that they are, what's the information they're keeping? What's hidden?
I think that they are protecting a bloodline. I think there may be a little more than that to it. I also believe that the Templars are very active today, that there are descendants of Templars right now working, hopefully, for the freedom of this planet. These are the stories I get via the grapevine. Allegedly, they are out there, and they're still working, and they've been very, very carefully plotting and running their own conspiracy for many years. I hope that's true. There's something I've recently come across in the last 6 months that I have not looked into thoroughly. And you mentioned Holy Grail, the Da Vinci Code. Burn it. And just burn it. And it's just such a warped version of what's been found and what hasn't been found. But as we all know, that little area of southern France seems to hold a lot of secrets. And apparently there's some other people who have done some digging there in the last 10 years, and they have come across a corpse in a cave, which they seem to believe is the corpse of Mary Magdalene, and you can see her on the internet. And I think it's www.bloodlinethemovie.com. They're coming out with a video on this. I found that fascinating because I was sure there was a lot more in that area than the original reporters dug up. But I don't know how accurate these people are at this point because not enough has come out yet to verify them.
Do you recommend that people read the Holy Blood, Holy Grail to get the truth?
Yes, I think that's really a good basic book. There are a lot of books that have come out since then with a lot more research.
It's certainly 2 inches thick.
Looking into genealogies teaches you a lot about what's going on in this world.
Do you think you're a descendant?
Oh, I know I am. I know my family history back a couple thousand years, and I'm not talking a line straight back. I'm talking hundreds of lines. When you're involved in these families, you tend to see one person in 10 different lines. You know, in one line he's your 23rd great-grandfather, in another line he's your 25th great-grandfather.
Yeah,
and,
that's pretty common.
Yeah, cousins married cousins. And so I know I am. I mean, I was raised on this stuff and was amazed when it all started coming public. But I do think that they are very much around today. I do think they're holding a lot of secrets. I do think they're being very, very careful because the powers that be that are controlling this planet are extremely dangerous. And I think that their intent is to win back what was lost by the early European royals. I think their intent is to win back a different way of life.
Do you have some secret knowledge because of your genetics?
I don't know, because I haven't sat down and looked at it all and looked at all the notes and looked at everything and looked at the maps and the charts and said, okay, what here would be secret? I mean, so much of this stuff has come out in books. When I was 10 years old, it would have been secret. But now you read it in books, and you see these different things that they did, and the very strange relationships they had, for instance, with the Cathars in southern France, and the Cathars themselves. There is so much we are not told in our histories. And then I was speaking the other day to a person who was very involved in what we call the alphabet agencies in the U.S. government. And she was talking about, I was saying to her, what the powers that be do seems so irrational. And she said, well, you're not looking at it from their perspective. They're expecting something major to happen around 2050, and they're preparing for it. And they're preparing for the return of their gods. And I said, but their gods are ETs. And she said, it doesn't matter. To them, they're gods. And it's just irrational what we see happening around us. But apparently, the plan is to kill off 4/5 of the population, and certain areas of this world, like the airport in Colorado and the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, are expected to be major landing sites. And we hear all of this in conspiracy stuff.
What? Caller. Can you hang on a minute, because
sure.
You're leading us into something that we want to talk about.
Okay.
And we only have about 10 minutes left, so
Just hang on.
Beth, one of the reasons, well, we love the idea of the Templars, but one of the things that have come about recently is you've come up with an idea for a new book. Caller, could you turn down your radio? We're hearing a feedback.
Okay, I don't have it on.
Well, we've got some feedback someplace. You've come to me with an idea for a new book.
Yes. And it's your fault, I'm going to say.
Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about this new book idea that you have that I just think is an extraordinary idea, and I want to support you in getting this book to the public?
Well, let me tell you very quickly how it started. I had this dream, and I'm a very big believer in dreams. I feel like I've been guided by them for years. Sometimes I didn't know till much later in my life what they were about. I had this dream. I was in Africa, and I won't go into all of it, but I was in this small village, and my father was a scientist that worked for the government, and there was a band of rebels coming through on these very these Jeeps with huge speakers, and there was this massive amount of noise coming out of these speakers. And I had this dream maybe a year ago, and my father told me that we all needed to cover our ears, because if not, the sound would kill us. Well, we didn't understand. We were children. But in the dream, I'm out of my body, and I'm watching everything in the streets, and as these vans are going by with these guys with guns and huge speakers, these people are starting to hold their heads in pain, and then they just fall over dead. I mean, their brains were literally exploding inside their heads, which is a crazy concept, and then it was mass chaos. So then, through some of my associations with Sherry and some of the things that we tend to talk about because we have similar interests, I kind of ran with that idea a bit. I thought, okay, for one, what if there were a conspiracy theory where our government was the culprit? Americans love those movies, but usually it deals with just one sect of the government. What if the government wanted to declare martial law? Okay, and this is a concept that people have been writing about somewhat. I mean, in 2005, FEMA had 600 concentration camps set up, empty, fully guarded, but empty. And that's grown to like 800 by now, by 2008.
Concentration camps as in jail?
As in, yes.
Okay.
Many of them are out west. A lot are in Southern California, and I've read some accounts of investigative reporters who have gone to these sites and been kicked out of the area because there's no trespassing, but they seem to be disguising themselves as something else. So the government's waiting on something. I mean, FEMA's also getting accumulating a massive amount of coffins. So the government's waiting on something. But what if they're not waiting on something? What if they're planning something?
And
which goes into what you were saying, caller. What if they're planning something, and we don't know it because as the general public, we don't pay attention to these things. Our lives are so busy. Most people don't read about things like that because it's not in their site of interest, you know, their site of need.
Natural yes. Solutions recently put out a press release saying that they felt the government or someone, you know, we're getting lots of feedback, and it's really disconcerting. Caller, can we ask you to hang up and see if this goes away?
Sure. One thing I just want to mention, I recently read an article that a valley was bought in upstate New York, and the government bought it. They were very secretive about the reason, but the clerk of the town let it out that it's supposed to be a mass grave site. You fill in the valley, and then you just cover it over with dirt. I'll try hanging up.
Right, and that's not something people would like to think our government would do.
What was I just talking about? Because that I can't stand hearing doubles like that. It was driving me crazy.
Okay.
So what was I just... Oh, Natural Solutions put it out that there's going to be some kind of pathogen released to infect people so that the government can declare martial law. Is that the kind of thing?
Yeah, and in fact, in my story, that's the idea I go with. In fact, it's spread through I believe it's something that's going to take place in the immediate future. Immediate future, I'm saying, you know, could happen a year or two from now. But the way I see it, this election is extremely important in so many ways. So many ways. I mean, there's really no point in me even going on about that, but what if this election had to do with that conspiracy, that government step into declaring martial law and to setting those actions in order?
So you're saying that through the political campaigning?
I'm saying through the presidential candidates. They go everywhere. Think about it. They're all over the country more than once. They're out there. They're not just speaking in massive stadiums. They're out touching people, talking to people, and there are four of them. What if they're not part of this conspiracy?
So you mean they would be the ones carrying this virus or bacterial pathogen?
Exactly.
So if we looked at all of their vocal prints and we found some common thing then your idea, your dream for a book is probably a reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what better way to disguise it? Think about it.
And I think they would disguise it as something that nobody would look at. If they were disguised, if there was a pathogen of some kind that was like the same frequency as electricity, then people would notice it. So in your book, are you going to use something like that, like 30 cycles a second
yes,
or something?
Yes,
that,
and it
or
is
60
like,
cycles it would be?
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is, and that comes pretty much from the concept in my dream. It could be discovered by someone. It would not be discovered by, say, someone like me who does not have the resources or the insight to look into something like that. But what if it were accidentally discovered by someone?
What would be the purpose of infecting all these people? That's why they have all those coffins. I see your face here.
I'm looking into the One World Order future.
That they would just want to kill us off or control us?
They're wanting to control us. And I think their greatest tool in controlling us is fear. Look how that's worked. It's worked well so far. And through this fear that would be instilled in us, they would have all the power they need. I mean, they've enacted new amendments to the martial law rule, closing down schools and things like that. I mean, they're setting up for something. And they have to know what's coming if they're getting ready for it.
So we, in your book, we need to think about, okay, they're probably going to do some kind of pathogen that's insidious, and we need to find some antidote, because that's what we do here at this center.
Right, exactly.
So if you find something that's like 60 cycles per second, because it could be hidden in electricity, then the antidote would probably be something like B12 or niacin or calcium, something like that. How do we get that to the people? I mean, if they're going to take over internet and radio stations and hospitals and schools, and, you know, that's already been written as an executive order, they can control everything. How, if that, you know, I think everything happens in people's imagination first, like Star Trek and tricorders and whatever.
And then it becomes a science.
And then it becomes a science and it becomes a reality.
Yeah.
So if they're waiting for something, a natural solution says it's going to be a pathogen or a virus or a toxin or something, and you think it's because they want to control the populace, you know, the stuff with Ron Paul, I think they're really fearful that so many people are rising up and saying, we need to be free.
We're very discontented right now.
And that would be a great way to control the populace and what's going on. Release some pathogen or toxin, have no way to fight it, kill off a lot of people, bring on the fear. I think this is a great book idea.
People eat this stuff up. And because, like I said, behind some every conspiracy, there's some root of some factor of truth. And if you put these pieces together, you know something's going down. We can't say when. I don't know that they can say when yet, but they're preparing for it.
So you think if you write a book about it, you can help prepare people better?
I mean, it will be a fictional book, naturally. But I think those who are inquisitive enough will start to see the connections with inside the book.
I would think that the thing that we need to protect the most is our ability to communicate with each other. And so many of us depend on cell phones. We've dropped our landlines, internet.
And we won't have those things.
So what do you think, how can we communicate? Ham radios? I mean, what do we need?
Yeah, I mean, we're going back to basics. We're going back to basically our caveman days.
Do you think we should get guns or protect
ourselves? No, I don't think we need guns. I don't support that.
Go into hiding?
What I see is, if you go back to my dream, and you go back to those Jeeps that were carrying the huge speakers, okay, what if the solution were there?
How?
In my dream, that was the root of the problem.
There was no solution?
not in my dream, I woke up before I had a solution. But what if that were the solution here, Sherry, with the kind of work that you do? I mean, you have health benefits to your work, but what if on a larger scale, say you were possibly able to detect it, maybe create an antidote for it, and that's what you work with, frequency. So what if frequency were part of the solution?
Well, when we take people's vocal prints, we can easily see a pathogen, a common pathogen. We can see a common virus, and we can quickly make an antidote without having to take it in the lab. So I can see big speakers on a car, like your dream was, and taking that to the people, taking it to the streets. And some of the equipment that we have here, people could have that ready.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Boy, coming full circle.
It is. It always does. That's the beauty of it.
Well, this idea that the Templars were there and they got buried because they wanted the people to have the freedom and the choice, and they've always protected people's health and well-being. This is a great idea for a book about bioacoustics and what it can do for the world. We are out of time. Whatever you do, whoever you want to vote for, whoever your candidate of choice, please remember to vote. And we'll be back with you next week. Thank you, Elizabeth, for being with us.
Thank you, Sherry. It's a pleasure.
Be a great book. Let's see if we can get your screenplay up on the screen.
I know. It's a work of art. It truly is.
I want to know more. And if you want to know more, just go to our website, Nutrasounds, N-U-T-R-A, sounds.com. Get in touch with us. Join our classes to learn to do this for you, your family, and your community. And help us help you with self-help. Thank you.